To introduce this episode of An American Gallery, here is Bill Cosby.
Wit and brilliance dwell in harmony. Shakespeare proved it, so did Chaplin, Laurel and Hardy, and a couple of American presidents named Lincoln and Kennedy. So at a cursory glance, humor hardly seems a companion to philosophy. Certainly, the name of Henry David Thoreau, one of America's great philosophers, rarely brings a smile to the face of anyone familiar with his work. And yet, under the revealing magnifying glass of research, we're likely to find that Thoreau was as witty as he was profound. Our story concerns itself with Thoreau's great work, Walden. In it, we'll meet several of Thoreau's closest friends, including Ralph Waldo Emerson, who preferred to be called Waldo, Bronson Alcott, a teacher, and Ellery Channing, author and poet. We think you'll find all of them as delightful as Thoreau did.
Henry David Thoreau, philosopher, saluted this week on An American Gallery. John Forsythe stars as Thoreau in To Hear a Different Drummer.
Oh, Henry, you're late. We've all been waiting.
Had the weather been any more invigorating, I should have been even later. Who waits?
Alcott, Bradford, Channing, Hawthorne, in their usual alphabetical order.
Good. Where?
In here.
Glad to see you with us tonight.
Gentlemen, Mr. Thoreau is with us.
Good evening.
We view with delight our man of the world, fleeing afar from his beloved woods. He has arrived among us to pick the first of the spring flowers.
Ellery, if I had said that myself, it couldn't have been more accurate.
Well, this then is the purpose of our gathering tonight, Waldo, huh? We're to embark on a search for spring flowers in the midst of winter.
Not quite, Alcott. Although, if our discussion directs itself on that course, I will not argue it.
I may.
You'd disappoint us if you didn't, Ellery. But before that, may I express my delight at the response of all of you to my suggestion of a weekly conversation group? Your very presence here, it gives me strong indication of the unlimited success for that which I have in mind. As a member of the Community of Concord for some 8 years, I feel a great pride in the fact that our town has established itself as one of the greatest, nay, the greatest literary center of our vast country in this year, 1844. I believe it is our assigned purpose, yours and mine, to preserve and further this great center, to insist on the power of thought and of will, on inspiration, on the miracle that is life, on culture in the individual. I believe it is our responsibility to impart to our fellow man our knowledge of the rewards to be had from living life on its highest plane. Yes. And with that, I will allow these overworked vocal cords a pause, your ears a rest, and throw the floor open in order that you too may express some of these feelings within yourselves. Yes, Hawthorne.
Nothing, Waldo, nothing. Frog in the throat.
Sorry, Nathaniel.
I oft-times reflect that this is a time of the flowering of New England.
Perhaps, Henry, the first winter flowering.
The frog, Nathaniel? Gentlemen, may I call your attention to the bowl of homegrown, freshly picked apples which have been placed before us tonight. Gentlemen?
Tempting.
Delicious looking.
Unread.
Yes. We need not gaze upon them any longer, gentlemen. My lovely wife will be much displeased if she finds you haven't taken and enjoyed them. Perhaps at our next meeting.
We're having another one.
We may discuss, as always, anything you wish.
Oh, is the meeting adjourned?
If you feel so inclined.
Well, I didn't mean to incline one way or another.
Wait. Nathaniel, you have something to bring up.
Yeah, I believe I did. Yes. I meant to say the hour is late.
Excellent point, Nathaniel.
Since the trend of the discussion seems to have led to a point of adjournment, so be it.
Perhaps our next discussion can hinge on the proposition that we hold future meetings in the midst of the prolific woods which surround us.
Oh, that's more than you've said in the entire evening, Ellery.
It came to me during the solitude.
Interesting thought.
The only sort I entertain. If you have a thought more grave than goodnight, Henry, please be out with and let us be off.
I like the wind. Gentlemen, someday soon I will build my lodge on the slope of some hill or pond, and I will listen to the winds whispering through the reeds.
Really? And then what, Henry?
I will watch the progress of the seasons, Waldo.
Waldo is the new owner of a pond or some such thing. Walden, isn't it?
Yes. I feel a debt to those woods is partially paid by saving them from the woodchopper's axe. And, Henry, they are yours to any use you would put them.
Oh.
There you are, Henry. You're a good old sixpence, you know. But I see nothing for you in this earth but to go out upon that pond, build yourself a hut, and begin this grand process of devouring yourself alive.
You can't be serious, Ellery. You never have been yet.
But honest, I see no other hope for you, nor alternative.
I believe he means it.
Do you think I should, Waldo?
I'm sure you will.
And since, Alcott, it's difficult to begin such a project without borrowing, I am at once indebted to you for the use of this marvelous and amazing axe.
A marvel true, and the apple of my eye.
And I hasten to say it'll be returned sharper than I received it. Have no fear.
Fear is not what brings me to the woods of Walden. More curiosity. What in the Lord's green earth and fine woods are you up to now, Henry?
After I complete the building of my lodge...
Hut.
I will simply take here the life that the gods send me. I shall accept all that is yielded me between sun and sun.
Of course. And for employment?
Will it not be employment enough to watch the progress of the seasons?
That's debatable.
Alcott, have you ever heard the proposition so often expounded? The one wherein the rule of the Bible is reversed, and we work one day in the week, and we rest for six.
This proposal originated with whom?
Myself.
Naturally.
I intend to put it into practice, too.
Good heavens, man. What could one possibly be doing while resting 6/7 of each week?
One could be writing a book. It could be the account of a trip taken by oneself and his late beloved brother. A vacation voyage on the Concord and the Merrimack Rivers, for example.
A noble tribute to John's memory.
As you well know, my financial situation has long prevented any devotion I might offer to writing as a career. But with this axe, I intend to remedy that demoralizing and deplorable situation.
You know something, Henry? I believe you will.
Gentlemen, well done. As fine a roof as has ever been raised, at least near this pond.
Now that it's finished, when do you anticipate moving day, Henry?
Oh, no hurry, Waldo. I shall do the remaining carpentry at my leisure. By the end of which time, if my calculations prove correct, my expenses will total $28.
Monstrous, Henry. How do you intend to raise that towering sum? By the help of friends, as in raising a roof?
The means by which most men earn the living is weakening and degrading. So I intend to raise as much as $10 or $12, Ellery, by honest and agreeable methods, such as planting beans and potatoes. And I shall also plant corn and peas and turnips for my own consumption.
And for unexpected guests?
Or perhaps as one of the first, you will see how happily a man may live once he decides to support himself in the pure, simple, and intelligent manner of the animals.
You hear, gentlemen, his guests shall eat as the animals.
Henry, I have a suggestion.
Waldo, I have lived some 29 years on this planet. I have yet to hear the first syllable of valuable or even earnest advice from my seniors. However, it is your land upon which I squat.
Suggestion. Might it be a doubly profitable occupation if you were to use the stumps, which you will have to remove for your crops, as firewood?
From its appearance, I should say, I'll be kept in fuel for a lifetime. But since the necessaries of life for a man in this climate may be distributed under the heads of food, shelter, clothing, and fuel, I'm grateful for your thoughtful observation. Obvious, but thoughtful. Months' effort, I have a substantial shelter for which I've searched my lifetime. A bit noisy at times, so near to the train, but substantial. Last, surrounded with only solitude and the essential facts of life, and where I can find out for myself what it is that life has to teach. Oh, how right you are. An abode without birds is like meat without seasoning. We will not argue the point, because you know how dear living is, and to live deliberately. Yes, of course, that's it. And if life proves to be mean, why then to know that, too, by experience. As I know you know. And someday I shall know also. Great heaven, we're attacked. You stay undercover while I see to the invaders. It may be the tax collector. No gunfire was ever more welcome.
My friend, it is to celebrate July the 4th, the Day of Independence.
Well, come inside. We shall celebrate it together. And you can tell me what brings you about these parts. Surely not in search of work without accident.
Oh, no. Never in these woods. They lie too close to my friend's heart. But for something to drink? Yes.
I am able to offer you the best from nature's rich and abundant store. I claim right to all I can use from the pond, which lies only a few feet away.
Water?
Water.
Water. Tell me this house. It's true. You live now among the trees and the birds.
My best friends. At last, they surround me.
Huh. And the books. So many of them. Oh, I see here Homer. A great writer, but what his writing is about exactly, I do not know.
Ah, then what better reason than to begin translating?
Already you have the visitor.
So it seems. Sophia, how glad I am that it's you.
Oh, I've been so worried. Henry, I haven't slept the whole night.
Well, Sophia, what is it? Here, take the chair. Oh. Alec, you know my sister.
Of course. Miss Sophia. But what is her trouble? She has been running from something.
Oh, I brought some food.
Oh, how thoughtful.
Of course I ran. You've been away from home the whole night. I knew by now you must be near starved.
Not quite. We were about to have a rather meager celebration, just the two of us. And now that you are here, you have turned it into a rich feast with the addition of your presence. And your cooking.
Bravo!
Oh, you have no idea how relieved I am to see that you've survived the rigors of this wild life.
Well, I'll make it a point hereafter to stop off at the house regularly.
Yes, Henry. After all, it's less than 2 miles away, you know.
Ah, Alec, treat your eyes. And then your palate. My sister's best baked cookies. She's known for her foodstuffs of every kind.
Aha! You do not lie. The proof is in the eating.
Try the goose. It's made with an orange sauce.
Oh, it's wonderful. Do you think there ever was a sister like her, Alec?
No, nor a goose either.
I must make a confession. I envy you, Henry. It must be marvelous to be able to live so close to all this. To walk among the trees and the grass and the flowers. To talk with the animals and the birds. But, Henry, it will also be lonely.
Sophia, we are for the most part more lonely when we go abroad among men than when we stay in our chambers. A man thinking or working is always alone. Let him be where he will. And, Sophia, when it comes time to die, I should hate to discover that I had not lived.
Henry, I'm glad to find you. Having walked near half the length of this miserable pond.
Oh, it's no more that than you are, Ellery. What's more, these waters run deep. Oh, did I tell you I've made an extensive chart of this pond?
No, but I'm sure you will. Is that all the greeting you have for me?
It's sufficient. I used a cod line, compass, chain, proved conclusively that Walden Pond, though an unusual depth, is not bottomless.
I'm glad to hear it.
Come, come. You can rest in the cabin.
Well, you seem none the worse for exposure.
Better, perhaps.
Henry, this cabin is the size of an overcoat.
May I offer a chair?
Since my choice seems to be confined to a bed, a table, a desk, and a frying pan, yes, I will accept your offer.
I have three chairs in my house. One for solitude, two for friendship, three for society. So your choice is an excellent one, especially since I'm about to place a most delectable dinner on the table adjoining it.
Oh, good. I'm famished. Or am I? What are we having?
One of my favorites, roasted horn pout. Oh, careful, that plate is hot. And beans fresh from the garden. And this you will recognize as a Portulaca oleracea, which I found to be a simple but most satisfactory dish.
Corn.
Exactly. Boiled with salt.
And what do you call this, bread?
My latest achievement. It occurred to me that the addition of raisins to the bread dough might be an interesting experiment. Now, the local housewives, they find my raisin bread rather shocking, but I find it quite edible. See what you think.
I'm still at the pout. I presume you conjured this intriguing fare out of thin air since I failed to locate a stove anywhere.
Look again. That hole in the earth, which I have inlaid with stones, I build my fire in that.
Primitive, but the results are delicious. I predict acceptance for your raisin bread.
Thank you.
Henry, this splendor must run into a figure for expense, not to mention your time.
Time is but the stream in which I go a-fishing.
Truthfully now, how are you faring in your experiment?
Well, in 8 months now, my food bill has averaged 27 cents a week. My crops have managed to pay for that with enough left over to pay my clothing bill of $8.40. And with the baskets of food that are brought over diligently by my dear mother and sister, I possibly have enough to feed an army of guests, which, of course, I have.
Well, what else do you do besides raise food, eat it, and go to sleep?
Oh, my time is well taken. Many mornings I just sit in the doorway and communicate with birds and other sociable inhabitants of these parts. And then I usually manage the housework before I get into the garden.
Ah, the paradise of beans.
You know, also a paradise for woodchucks, worms, and weeds. However, I anticipate a better crop than most of the farmers hereabouts. And in my leisure, I stroll in the woods, I go boating, go fishing.
But are you a success?
Ellery, if the day and the night is such that you greet them with joy, and life emits a fragrance like flowers and sweet-scented herbs, and life is more elastic, more starry, more immortal, Ellery, these are my terms, and on my terms, it's a resounding success.
And the passing train?
Passes. I pay it no heed.
Henry, if I ever make any sort of success with my notebook, I think I'll write your biography.
Well, try to select as conducive a location as I have to carry on your career. You know my book, The Concord and the Merrimack Rivers? It's progressing so well, I fear it'll be ready to publish before I'm ready to leave here. And my notes on Carlisle begun 3 years ago? Well, it wasn't until my arrival here that I was able to collect them into any essay form.
And then what?
If my calculations prove true as ever, I may even be able to deliver a lecture in less than 3 months.
There you are.
Waldo.
Your views on Thomas Carlyle seem to have entertained the audience tonight, Henry, in spite of the fact that your lecture was really stimulating and instructive.
I found, Waldo, it takes two to make a good lecture, the talker and the listener.
Henry, congratulations. Amusing and instructive lecture.
Thank you, Walker. I know they were amused because they laughed.
But they do consider it strange. You living in the woods and all.
Oh, yes, I heard it repeatedly. Why does he live in a cabin in the woods? What does he do? What does he eat? Is he lonesome? Is he afraid?
Alcott, you know, the answers are as simple as life itself. I plant food, I cook, I eat, I sleep, I wash, I breathe the air. What they fail to understand is that I have no desire to acquire possessions, nor do I seek to belong to their desperate odd fellow society. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it's because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. While they live out their lives in quiet desperation, Alcott, I live mine in complete exaltation.
Alcott, do you suppose it possible that our Henry could actually become celebrated one day? Merely on the occasion of his being the inhabitor of a lonely cabin on the shores of Walden Pond?
Most unlikely, Walden. Mm.
I'm forced to agree. Of course, it's occurred to me, Alcott, but I see no reason whatever for changing my long-confirmed state of bachelorhood. My cabin was built for one, and it shall remain so.
Henry, every man should have a wife.
Why? To take her opinions on life's incessant questions and act in opposition to them? I derive no pleasure in talking with a woman simply because she has regular features. And with it all, women are so light and flighty, you can never be sure whether they're there or not. And you must remember, too, Alcott, my experiment out here is based first and foremost on a period of solitude and communion with nature.
Papa, Mr. Thoreau.
Over here, Louisa May.
Oh, Alcott, if your daughter weren't so young and I so poor, I'd say you were trying to make a match for her with all your lecturing to me about a wife.
The woods were so thick back there, I thought I'd lost the way to your cabin. When can we go on that boat ride you promised?
Just in time, Louisa May. I have a suspicion there's nothing your father would rather do more.
There are times, you see, when the distaff side serves a glorious purpose. Louisa May, you have just managed to rescue your father from one of Henry's interminable walks, an activity I will never take to nor understand.
How else to find the sweet rhodora that grows in the wood? And perhaps I'll be able to introduce some of my family to you on the expedition back.
Is that a flute, Mr. Thoreau?
Mm-hmm. Through which I produce more sound than music. Listen.
Oh, Papa, look, the squirrels. They're going to follow us. What's that?
The frogs are convening.
I don't believe it.
They answered your flute.
Yes. Here we are. This is Patrick here, and that's Henry. And...
Oh, two baby frogs.
Henry, I...
Yes, Alcott?
Nothing.
Here, hey, Louise, don't be afraid. They're quite sociable.
I think they should ride in Henry's hat.
If you insist, all right.
A collar?
Don't fear, Louisa May. Our boat ride may be delayed, but not postponed.
Oh, Mr. Thoreau, let me introduce myself. Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Alcott, Louisa May.
Good afternoon.
I, Mr. Thoreau, am the current president of the Anti-Slavery Women's Auxiliary Group of Concord, Mrs. Whipple.
Charmed.
I'm sure your dear mother has told you about us. She said what a wonderful idea to have our annual commemoration of the freeing of the West Indian slaves out here in your beautiful woods.
Isn't that just like Mother?
It's so beautiful here. So much air and plant life and... water.
Yes, I found that to be the case, yes.
The other ladies will join us shortly. We'll serve our little picnic lunch. Well, this will be our most successful commemoration yet. And in my year of office. Oh, I'm so glad you could join us, Mr. Thoreau.
Mm-hmm. There you see, Henry. It's true what they're saying in town. Going to see Henry Thoreau was one of Concord's first recreations. That solitude of which you spoke... Perhaps you'd be wise to seek it in town.
Well, I'll be there in 2 weeks.
Oh, yes, your lecture on Walden.
Yeah. Oh, but now let's get to the boat before we're all inundated by the picnicking women's auxiliary. If thy hand has plenty, be liberal as the date tree. But if it affords nothing to give away, be like the cypress. And this I call a history of myself.
Henry, you were a resounding success.
Hi, Waldo. How good to see a familiar face.
Oh, there'll be more coming back to congratulate you. I think they enjoyed hearing a man with the courage to follow his own convictions.
And I'll second that, Waldo. Henry, I think you've cracked the barrier of misunderstanding with your lecture tonight.
Mr. Thoreau,
know. I wasn't going to forgive you for missing our picnic, but then listening to you tonight. You will be telling us more.
Well, our horizon is never quite at our elbow, Mrs. Whipple.
Our appetites have been so whetted.
Oh, there's no doubt you have enough food for thought to fill a book, Henry.
Yes?
It shouldn't take you any time with what you've got in your journal.
What he has in his journal would fill a dozen books.
That's true, Ellery, true.
But after hearing your lecture, you really should write a book. And it need not be long.
No, it needn't be, but it may take a long while to make it short.
Well, you must write it, Henry. You've learned much in the paths you've followed these past 2 years.
Well, I've learned this, at least. That if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he'll meet with a success unexpected in common hours. If you build castles in the air, your work need not be lost, because that is where they should be. Now, put the foundations under them.
Yes. Well, if you'll excuse me. Good night, all.
Good night, Mrs. Whipple.
Good night.
Henry, I must admit your philosophy is exciting, if controversial.
Regardless, others deserve a chance to consider it.
In 2 years in your cabin, you must have gathered considerable evidence to persuade people. Evidence to prove your philosophy has merit.
Yes, but alas, it's all circumstantial evidence. On the other hand, some circumstantial evidence is very strong. As when you find a trout in the milk.
A trout?
Very strong evidence indeed.
Of course, Thoreau did write his book. Selecting a quote from Walden is like trying to pick your favorite raindrop during a summer storm. Each is part of the whole, and they are almost infinite in number. We've chosen this one. However mean your life is, meet it and live it. Do not shun it and call it hard names. It is not so bad as you are. It looks poorest when you are richest. The fault finder will find fault even in paradise. Love your life, poor as it is. You may have some pleasant, thrilling, glorious hours, even in a poorhouse. Superfluous wealth can buy superfluities only. Money is not required to buy one necessary of the soul.
You have been listening to another portrait in an American gallery. Today, Henry David Thoreau, philosopher. Our story, To Hear a Different Drummer, starred John Forsythe as Henry Thoreau. It was written by Robert M. Young, produced and directed by William Lally. Featured in the cast were Les Tremaine, Ray Strickland, Harley Bear, Warren Parker, Steve Franken, Francis Spanier, and Alice Backus. Sound by Gene Twombly. Art Ballinger speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.